So what exactly happened last week over in London? What are they telling us happened? The first news that I got was that there had been three simultaneous explosions on trains, and then a little bit later, a bus blew up. Then, the same day, the reports were that the train bombings happened about 15 minutes apart. Then, a few days later, it's reported again that they were simultaneous. I don't know what the truth is. It turns out to have been sleeper cells. And, well, is it proven yet that they're suicide bombers? All of which makes me think about this war on terror. How do you stop a war on terror? How do you win a war on terror when it's about ideology? When it's about religion? As you will hear coming up today, you'll hear about the about how Dick Cheney had said that we're fighting the war in Iraq so that we don't have to fight it in Washington and London. He said that specifically. Well, how do you stop doctors and lawyers? How do you stop people who are educated, who have made decisions in their lives which you can't deal with? What do you do? What are we gonna do? This is the Thursday Impressionistic News Hour for the 14th of July, 2005. Happy Bastille Day to all of our friends and brothers and sisters in France. Ah. We owe so much to the French. So we need to wave our flags to our fellow country. We learned so much from them. And here we are. Today is the 14th. And it's midsummer. And things are slow and quiet, I suppose. So, I don't know. I have some of the same normal stuff to do. I got a weekly news. And I don't even know if I have enough material for an hour. But it's time. So press those ears up against the speaker. Listen to Roman Kirk. And get ready for the Kill Radio Impressionistic News. This is the weekly news in review, posted July 12th, 2005, by Paul Ford from the Harpers.org website. I'm Bennett, your faithless host, and this is for the July 14th, Bastille Day, Thursday, Impressionistic News Hour. The weekly news, of course, concerns the news of the previous week. Visiting Scotland for the G8 summit, President George W. Bush fell off his bicycle after running into a policeman. Bush was hurt, but not badly. The policeman hurt his ankle. I should act my age, said Bush. Terrorists set off bombs on 4 trains and a bus in London, killing 52 people, despite the fact that in 2003, Dick Cheney said that our military is confronting the terrorists along with our allies in Iraq and Afghanistan so that innocent civilians will not have to confront terrorist violence in Washington or London or anywhere else in the world. What an idiot. We're the ones causing this. I mean, we didn't cause the bombs, but we're the ones pushing these terrorists to do more things. President Bush condemned attacks on innocent folks by those with evil in their hearts. The war on terror, he eulogized, goes on. Hey, I strongly condemn those bombs. That was a horrible, stupid thing to do. However, several London hotels increased their rates in response to the bombings. I think they're learning from Americans. Hey, charge more. British MP George Galloway said that London has reaped the involvement of Mr. Blair's involvement in Iraq. Over in Iraq, a suicide bombing killed 21 people. 8 members of the same Shiite family were shot and killed. Suicide car bombs killed 7 people near the Syrian border. Iraqi police detailed 12 suspected militants inside a metal box under the Iraqi sun. 9 died from the heat. And one of the survivors complained that he had been given electric shocks by the police. Silvio Berlusconi announced that Italy will start pulling its troops out of Iraq in September. And in Afghanistan, the Taliban beheaded 10 Afghan soldiers and killed a Navy SEAL. The commander of Guantanamo Bay was fired, and a 9-year-old boy fell into a hot spring pool at Yellowstone National Park and was burned on over 40% of his body. A South Carolina courthouse was vandalized by a goat. New York Times journalist Judith Miller was sent to jail in Virginia for refusing to appear before a grand jury in connection to the Valerie Plame case. Of course, we know that Karl Rove was apparently telling reporters about this, and while he didn't name names, he certainly pointed to Valerie Plame. And the Bush administration had said they would fire whoever leaked such information. Shall we see what the Bush administration does now? In the jail, where Zacharias Massawi is also an inmate, Judith Miller had to sleep on the floor. Now, yes, Karl Rove's lawyer acknowledged that Rove spoke about Valerie Plame to Time magazine reporter Matt Cooper. Rove released Cooper from his promise of confidentiality, allowing the journalist to testify and avoid jail. Leaders at the G8 meeting decided to give $3 billion to Palestine. They also decided to double the aid sent to Africa to $50 billion. Too little, said a Uganda aid activist. Too late. Israel planned to ask the United States for $2.2 billion to help them pull out from Gaza. The European Parliament voted 648-14 against software patents. Seattle's new energy-efficient City Hall building was found to be using 15-50% more electricity than its larger predecessor. Polar bears were dying in greater numbers due to global warming, which of course still doesn't exist. And a man was arrested for paying children to yell at him because he's fat. McDonald's Corporation asked Russell Simmons, P. Diddy, and Tommy Hilfiger to redesign the company's uniforms. That's gross. The United Church of Christ endorsed same-sex marriage. 4 teenagers were charged with urinating into the holy water at the St. Pius X Church in Rochester, New York. And Cedric, a 70-year-old turtle prone to attacking drainpipes and lawnmowers, was wandering loose in Borowash, Derbyshire. U.S. Treasury Secretary John Snow said that Canadian oil was important to American security. Bulls gored four people in Spain. Cats were suffering from plague in Wyoming. And Air Supply played the Karl Marx Theater in Cuba. Hurricane Dennis killed 32 people in the Caribbean. Both factions in the Ivory Coast War agreed to disarm by October. Paula Jones announced that she would visit the Clinton Library. And a study found that circumcised men are less likely to contract HIV. Isn't that most of us? The Godfather was now a video game. It was announced that up to 4,700 birds, including burrowing owls, red-tailed hawks, and golden raptors, were being killed each year by a wind farm in Altamont, California. A Hungarian-speaking parakeet was loose in Vermont. It's probably near somebody's summer home. And a Massachusetts parrot appeared to understand the concept of zero. Scientists found that taking regular showers could cause brain damage. 400 sheep killed themselves in Turkey. And at a funeral in Pennsylvania, a corpse was given a pack of cigarettes, a beer, and a remote control, and allowed to watch football. That sort of reminds me of the Roger Corman movie, The Wild Angels, where Bruce Dern is killed, and they take him to a church, prop him up with a joint in his mouth, and then proceed to rape his old lady. That's the weekly news in review. Can your heart stand it? Don't worry, we're not done yet. Okay, now what the Impressionistic News Hour means is that I appropriate material to see what I can do with it. So are you ready? It's time to begin.
Look up in the brassy sky, and there they are like gloomy pocket change. You bet on something you wish you had 10,000 to bet on. Something where the odds are good. Betting all those stars, you don't mean shit, and there is maybe another me.
Thank you. disorder marked by sadness, inactivity, difficulty in thinking and concentration, feelings of dejection and hopelessness, and sometimes suicidal tendencies. We live in an age where depression is rampant. In fact, studies show that an increasing number of children are now being affected. While depression is normally considered the domain of psychologists and psychiatrists, we cannot ignore the fact that depression is a classic example of the feelings and attitudes that negative spiritual forces strive to create. Depression is clearly not only a sign of the presence of evil spirits, but a tool that they use.
These are our children. They skip down our streets, but the pedophile is waiting.
Take a look at this. What is it? Just a hillside? Look again. There's a child there, no more than a blue speck. But the fact is, if you show this picture to a pedophile, they'll actually try and attack it in an attempt to reach the child. That's the sort of warped mindset we're dealing with.
Even our most drastic measures don't work. Last month, the notorious paedophile Sidney Cook was blasted into space to spend the rest of his life aboard a one-man prison vessel, posing no further threat to children on Earth. But it was revealed that an 8-year-old boy was also placed on board by mistake and is now trapped alone in space with the monster. A spokesman said, "This is the one thing we didn't want to happen."
Why can we no longer think of the British Isles without the word pedoph in front of them? Good evening. We're live tonight from the epicentre of Operation Daisy Bird. Welcome to Pedogeddon.
People like this are everywhere.
That's why my own children are here with me. Good night, children. They're safe tonight. Are yours?
I doubt it. That's why we've taken over every major stadium in the country. Please, we must have your children safe in one of those by midnight. They're already filling up nicely, and that's the check-in area in Cardiff, and you can see clowns there fitting children with anti-paedophile canisters. Those canisters can be remotely activated if the child goes missing. They put off paedophiles by spraying the child with 8 litres of pressurised sewerage.
We're after your help too. Security footage of a paedophile disguised as a school. He's been getting away with it in Sheffield for 12 years. Do you know him? Have you seen him? Please call.
But let's start with a look at how the paedophile problem has grown over the years.
In the 1950s, a national questionnaire explained exactly what a paedophile was. Each man in Britain was asked if he thought he was one. 92% said yes. 1969 and the summer of Pan saw thousands of young paedophiles party without shame in parks and fields. And as late as 1973, people still thought nothing of hits like Playground Bang Around.
Turn right inside, turn little boy on the slide, little girl on the swing.
As I sing the whole thing!
Playground Bang Around!
But today, the number of children having sex with adults is beyond belief. If you define a child as anyone under 30, the figure is over 86%. We have become a people confused.
The pedophiles, delivering justice under men who prey sex on our children.
Men who have sacrificed the right to a life without pain.
I know how they look. I know how they think. I was one, for Christ's sake.
10 years ago, I had designs on my own kids. I knew that one day I might act on them. So to stop me, I shot myself in my own head. I'd killed the pedophile in me. Now I do the same for society. Because these men have chosen the way of the animal.
They don't deserve punishment. They deserve gunishment.
The Pedophile starts next week on 4, straight after Pedophile Island. 100 kids and an ex-offender on an island full of cameras. What's going to happen?
No Most stadiums are over half full now. There is a parent riot currently in Leeds, which started after a paedophile in a microlite committed an overhead perversion at Headingley Stadium. But police helicopters soon chased him into pylons where he crashed screaming like a pig in a war.
Well, it has been a great night, hasn't it?
It certainly has, Chris. 2 million children now safe in our stadiums.
A paedophile was attacked in his car this evening, but I have to say, if your surname was Farr, would you call your son Peter?
No!
And look, if a child does take your fancy, please remember, leave it a couple of years.
I did.
Good night.
One day I want to, but not today.
She can be kissed, but in an innocent way.
And her cherry must ripen naturally in the soul.
Not ready yet, not ready yet, not ready today.
There's a little minx, should I buy her with drinks? None!
Capitalism. Birdbrain, chief bureaucrat of Russia, yawning. Birdbrain ran FBI 30 years, appointed by FDR, and never chased Cosa Nostra. Birdbrain apportioned wheat to be burned, keep prices up on the world's markets. Money to developing nation police states through the World Bank. Birdbrain offers brain transplants in Switzerland. Birdbrain wakes up in the middle of the night and arranges his sheets. I am Birdbrain. Russia, Yugoslavia, England, Poland, Argentina, United States, El Salvador. Birdbrain multiplies in Russia, China, and the United States. Birdbrain inhabits Stalin's corpse inside the Kremlin wall. Birdbrain dictates petrochemical agriculture in Afric desert regions. Birdbrain lowers North California's water table, sucking it up for Orange County agribusiness banks. Birdbrain clubs baby harp seals and wears their coats to Paris. Birdbrain runs the Pentagon, his brother runs the CIA, fat ass bucks. Birdbrain writes and edits Time, Newsweek, Wall Street Journal, Pravda, Izvestia. Birdbrain prepares Wonder Bread with refined white flour. Birdbrain sold slaves, sugar, tobacco, alcohol. Birdbrain sent 20 million intellectuals and Jews to Siberia. 15 million never got back to the Straight Door Cafe. Wore a mustache and ran Germany on amphetamines the last year of World War II. Birdbrain conceived the final solution to the Jewish problem of Europe. Birdbrain carried it out in gas chambers. Birdbrain borrowed Lucky Luciano Sacramento, the mafia from jail secures Sicily for U.S. bird brain against the Reds. Manufactured guns in the Holy Land and sold them to white boys in South Africa. Bird brain supplied helicopters to Central American generals to kill a lot of restless Indians, encourage a favorable business climate. He began a war of terror against Israeli Jews. Sent Zionist planes to shoot Palestinian huts near Beirut. Bird brain outlawed opiates on the world market. Bird brain formed the black market in opium. Father shot Skag in the hallways of the Lower East Side of New York. Organized Operation Condor to spray poison fumes on the marijuana fields of Sonora. Bird Brain got sick in Harvard Square from smoking Mexican grass. Bird Brain arrived in Europe to conquer cockroaches with propaganda. Bird Brain became a great international poet and went around the world praising the glories of Bird Brain. I declare Bird Brain to be victor in the poetry contest. He built the World Trade Center on New York Harbor without regard where the toilets emptied. He began jumping down the Amazon rainforest to build a wood pulp factory on the riverbank. Bird Brain in Iraq attacked Bird Brain in Iran. Bird Brain in Belfast throws bombs at his mother's ass. Bird Brain wrote Das Kapital, authored the Bible, penned the Wealth of Nations. Bird Brain, humanity, he built the Rainbow Room on top of Rockefeller Center so we could dance. He invented the theory of relativity so Rockwell Corporation could make neutron bombs at Rocky Flats in Colorado. Bird Brain's gonna see how long he can go without coming. Bird Brain thinks his dong will grow big that way.
Bird Brain found out he was a Buddha by meditating.
He's gonna blow up the planet, so he built this rocket to get away. So he sang this song to be immortal.
Bird Brain sang this song to be immortal. That's Allen Ginsberg from 1980. And it does show how many things have passed in those times. Iran attacking Iraq. Wow, who'd have thought of that? The World Trade Center? Where's that? This is the Impressionistic News Hour on Thursday, the 14th of July, 2005. And next up is a lift from Meet the Press.
Admiral Loy, Stephen Flynn, welcome both. Mr. Flynn, let me quote from your book and start our conversation here. Terrorism analysts have cataloged a dozen or more imitator groups operating around the world whose collective membership numbers in the tens of thousands. The commuter train bombings in Madrid on March 11, 2004 were a wake-up call for those who believe these groups pose no serious threat. By late 2004, it has become clear that Al-Qaeda had morphed from an organization with an inner core of several hundred dedicated fighters into a global movement. This reality reinforces this book's central message to evade a concerted effort to protect the United States at home by focusing almost exclusively on, quote, taking the battle to the enemy is a formula for disaster. Explain.
Well, it's very clear what we've seen here in the London case is yet another example of the fact that, one, we get no warning when these attacks happen. Secondly, these folks weren't in the central front of Iraq or Afghanistan, but look to be as though they were homegrown folks, sleeper cells. So taking the battle to the enemy requires us increasingly to deal with the fact that Al-Qaeda is in up to 40 nations around the world, including our own. And the fact that we didn't get any intelligence suggests yet again that we need to think about a system that's based around alerts and really rolling up our sleeves, looking at what's most critical to us, and beginning the process of building safeguards. And also assuming that we're not going to be successful 100% of the time. And so the response, how we show our resilience as a nation, is so critical to being effective in dealing with this new warfare.
Do you believe we're spending enough on our railway cars, subways, and the buses?
Well, we're not. And there's sort of a bad news, good news with where we are right now with regard to the transit. Our systems are more vulnerable than the British systems are. And yet, at the same time... Well, we haven't got the amount of exercises and training that has been done in the UK. The coordination between the Metropolitan Police, the Scotland Yard, these kinds of things have been well refined over the course of a couple of decades because of the IRA issues. The closed-circuit TV use, the amount of patrolling... Basically, there's a lot more happening there and has happened there. And so that should be a wake-up call for us here. But to put the number in context, we spent about $500 million total on transit security in the United States in 9/11, almost 4 years. We're spending that every 3 days in the war in Iraq. We still have virtually all our eggs in the basket of taking the battle to the enemy, as if the enemy was all concentrated in those two countries. Instead of that, we're dealing with an ongoing threat that's truly global.
Admiral, you agree?
Offensive effort that the Bush administration is pushing, I think, is the classic best defense is often a good offense. And to me, the question is, what do we do with the time we buy attendant to the campaign in Afghanistan, campaign in Iraq, and elsewhere around the world? The challenge there is for us to not only deal with what we're going to try to do to prevent bad things from happening and respond to them if they do here in our country, but I also think we should be taking advantage of this time to offer radical Muslims who have the potential to slide towards very intense radicalism, suicide bombers and what have you, another option, a better way to go. Fall off the fence on the side of moderates, as we are now seeing reflected in London in the mosque, which heretofore had been a proving ground for nurturing jihadists, and over the course of this last incident has very, very adroitly stepped forward with very moderate commentary.
Do you believe there are sleeper cells here in the United States?
I think the contrary question is the better question to ask. We cannot afford to presume that there are not. So with the assumption that there are, Steve's commentary with respect to a balanced approach, and what I heard the Secretary say just moments ago, understanding the balance in threats and vulnerabilities as the guidepost for which we will make investments towards prevention and response capability.
The idea of trying to get in the hearts and minds of young Muslims is a noble one, but that's long term.
It is, in fact, long term, and I would offer that not unlike those who suggest, and me among them, that we as a nation sort of took a decade off in the aftermath of the fall of the wall in 89 and the implosion of the Soviet Empire, we must now be rebuilding our information-generating capability, whether that's intelligence in the classic sense or the use of information and intelligence in a 21st century challenge against this new ism. I've referred to this as the first ism we're dealing with in the 21st century as opposed to the Nazism, socialism, and communism of the 20th century. The utilization and the investment we must make in being able to see what's about to happen, we call that awareness at the department, and pushing out of the old prevention protocols of the past something up front that allows us to concentrate on gathering information, doing the analysis necessary, and then acting on it.
There's a lot of discussion about the economic situation that some of these young Muslims come from, but the fact is many of the hijackers on September 11th were very well-off Saudi Arabians, trained, sons of doctors and lawyers and other professionals. Is there a concern in your mind that there are some Americans, as well as other people around the world, who are more loyal to their faith or their interpretation of their faith, Islam, than they are to their country?
I think that's always a possibility. I mean, the nature of our country and its freedom of thought almost offers the opportunity that for that to be the fact. Our challenge, again, is to offer recognition that events like Madrid and London sort of put on the table that this particular enemy, this first challenge we have in the 21st century, is about the destruction of hope. And that's not what America is all about. America is about ideas and the whole generation of progressing civilization down the path that it should go with opportunity. And it doesn't take too much to set back just a moment objectively and make a choice there.
Stephen Flynn, let me refer you again to a part of your book. You write, in late August 2004, I testified at my 12th post-September 11th congressional hearing. 3 years after that attack, I found myself making a pitch to lawmakers for them to do many of the things I had advocated before 9/11. Yet everyone seemed to be going through the motions. It was hard to keep my sense of frustration in check. In my parting words to the committee that day, I told them that I hoped that my testimony would amount to something more than fodder for a future Blue Ribbon Commission when they draft the report explaining how the government failed to prevent and effectively respond to the next major terrorist attack on U.S. soil. That's rather pessimistic.
Well, it's now been 15 times that I've had a chance to testify before Congress, and Congress is very much part of this problem. There's, in terms of just oversight of the Department of Homeland Security, they have not reorganized themselves. They've got the Secretary of Homeland Security has almost 60 committees and subcommittees that oversee them. Nobody is seeing the forest for the trees. And so we've got this imbalance. We've got essentially the administration putting all its eggs in the war in Iraq and Afghanistan as the focus of the war on terror. We've got business as usual largely on the Hill. And we've got this very just real fact that it's not of anybody's. We went for a century as basically on a joyride where we never had attacks on our soil. We could think about national security as something that we could do as an away game. But now we're in a time when we have an adversary who blends into the woodwork, both in modern open societies like ours, has a real has increasingly the real desire to cause mass destruction of the critical infrastructures that underpin our modern way of life. And yet we didn't build any safeguards into them. When we put these infrastructures together, we said, as a market, how do we make them open, efficient, reliable, and low cost? And security was viewed as raising costs, undermining efficiency, undermining reliability, and putting pressure to close the system. This is a difficult nut to crack. We can crack it, just as we've done everything that's met every challenge that's confronted this nation. I'm optimistic we can do it, but we've got to see it as a true national priority.
Do we see it as a true national priority, Admiral?
Oh, I think indeed we do. The balance that Steve is after, I think we are all after. And I think we also have to recognize this as sort of an all-hands evolution. Citizens of this country have to be resistant to the complacency of trying to find the good old days or back to normal. we're living in a new normalcy. And the question you asked Secretary Chertoff this morning about ever seeing green on the scale, I don't believe we will. Green is about the old normalcy. Yellow is about the standard of the new normalcy until we have a much, much better picture of the intentions and the capabilities of this new enemy. The notion of risk being part of our lives today has simply got to find its way into everyone's souls and minds.
Music for the people.
In a world going mad, it's hard to think right. So much violence, hate, and spite. Murder going on all day and night. Team time to fight the non-violent fight.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3.
Mirrors, smoke, screams, and lies. It's not the politicians, but the actions I despise. You insist on to kick it like back in the day. Cocaine and Cavassier.
Did you build more bombs? Is you getting more bold? Is your midlife crisis more unfolds? All you wanna do is take kids on up with that access to evil bullshit on hold.
Now, citizen rule number 2080. Politicians are shady. So people watch your back cause I think they smoke crack. I don't doubt it, look at how they act.
In a world going mad, it's hard to think right. So much violence, hate, and spite. Murder going on all day and night. Team time, we fight the non-violent fight.
First of all, tear, now war in Iraq. We're reaching a point where we can't turn back. Or let's lose the guns, or let's lose the bombs. Or stop the corporate contributions that they built upon.
Well, I'll be sleeping on your speeches till I start to snore. Cause I won't carry guns for an oil war. As-salamu alaikum, alaikum salam. Peace to the Middle East, peace to Islam.
Now don't get us wrong, cause we love America. But that's no reason to get hysterical. They're laying off the syrup. If we ain't waffles, we ain't having it.
In a world going mad, it's hard to think right. So much fun. Violence, hate, and spite. Murder going on all day and night. Team time, we fight the non-violent fight.
Now how many people must get killed?
Oil families' pockets to get filled.
How many oil families get killed?
Not a damn one, so what's the deal?
It's time to lead the way and de-escalate. Lose the weapons of mass destruction and the hate. Say ooh, ah, what the White House doing? Oh no, see what they got blue in.
Well, I'm not pro Bush and I'm not pro Saddam. We need these fools to remain calm. George Bush, you're looking like Zoolander, trying to play tough for the camera, camera.
What am I on, crazy pills? We gotta stop it. Get your hands out my grandma's pockets. We need healthcare more than going to war. You think it's democracy they're fighting for?
In a world going mad, it's hard to think right. So much violence, hate, and spite. Murder going on all day and night. Team time, we fight the non-violent fight. In a world going mad, it's hard to think right. So much violence, hate, and spite. Murder going on all day and night. Team time, we fight the non-violent fight.
That's how we are living. We are living in a sort of a risk-managed, requiring set of days in our lives.
And yet our government has an obligation to protect its citizens. You were the former commandant of the Coast Guard. You're a former commander of the Coast Guard. This article from USA Today on Wednesday, Coast Guard plagued by breakdowns. The Coast Guard's ships, planes, helicopters are breaking down at record rates, which may threaten the service's ability to carry out its post-September 11th mission of protecting ports and waterways against terrorism. Key members of Congress, maritime security experts, and a former top Homeland Security Department official, that would be you, Admiral Loy, say that the fleet is failing and that the plans to replace the Coast Guard's 88 aging cutters and 186 aircraft over the next 20 years should be accelerated. But the Bush administration wants to increase the amount of time it will take to replace a fleet that's among the oldest on the globe. That doesn't sound like a priority.
Well, it must become one. The challenge attendant to both time and the investment of dollars actually can be good stewardship for the American taxpayer if we advance the pace of this particular modernization project to somewhere around 15 years and save $4 or $5 billion in the process by not trailing it out over the course of 20 or 25. That article is a very good reflection of the state of physical capability, the platforms that this service is being asked to use to get its work done for our country today.
But here we are nearly 4 years after September 11th, and we're talking about the state of the United States Coast Guard. Mr. Flynn, you referred to it as a third world Navy.
Well, it has the equivalency of, in terms of how it's operating, these are young men and women who are risking their lives to protect our lives. Just like we have emergency responders in New York, in Washington, D.C., in Los Angeles, and around this country, who are risking their lives to safeguard our lives, given the inevitability of these attacks, certainly the attempts on these attacks. And it is just really disgraceful that as a nation, we're not giving them the tools they need. We need to get some balance. The cost of basically upgrading the Coast Guard's ability. We're talking ships that are 30-plus years old that are breaking down routinely on patrol. It's about the cost of a new DDX destroyer would pay for the next 3 years. The Navy's new desire destroyer would be what would pay for Coast Guard capability for the next 3 years. In terms of not getting a balance between national security and homeland security, we're not even close yet because we're really just fighting the last war.
Based on everything you have learned and know, do you believe that there will be another major catastrophic terrorist attack in the United States?
I think there almost certainly will be. In fact, there's a heightened risk of the catastrophic attack in the U.S. vis-a-vis what we saw in London and Madrid, precisely because the sleeper cell presence is smaller. They're going to husband that resource and use it for something bigger. And I think what everybody's worried about and should be worried about is the weapon of mass destruction scenario, that it's a nuclear, biological, or chemical weapon. And by the way, don't even have to import a chemical weapon. We have chemical facilities around this society pre-positioned near population centers and key assets like ports that the U.S. government doesn't even have the authority to go and inspect their security plans today. So these are the kinds of gaping holes that remain. This is not for the want of good efforts of people in the Department of Homeland Security who are working this issue, but it is a fact it's a very big challenge and hasn't been treated, I believe, at the extent of a national priority it deserves to be.
Admiral Lloyd, do you have any doubt there will be another major catastrophic attack?
Well, my sense is that there will be, and it comes from two thoughts. I spent most of the decade of the 80s, as did most of my colleagues in the Coast Guard and DEA and other agencies, working against the cartels in Colombia. Our ability to take the head off of that monster, those four or five or six major cartel families, only offered the chance for 20 or 25 lieutenants within those cartels to emerge as leaders of separate entities to deal in that particular death-related product. I think there's an analogy here that's appropriate for terrorism. To the degree we are able to have successfully cut the head off, not quite with bin Laden yet, but we're going to get him sooner or later, the cells that are now potentially able to operate on their own offer the chance that Steve is citing. This risk management thing I mentioned a moment ago is really where the department has to focus. And to the degree they do focus in a risk-based process, WMD, and I would add cyber to the list Steve just described because of how prevalent it is everywhere in our society, we must find a zero-tolerance process attendant to those kinds of threats and then deal in a risk management sense with the rest.
Do you think we're creating more terrorists in Iraq than were there?
I don't know that there's enough information on the table for us to make a judgment on that. There certainly are voices on both sides of the equation that are pretty hard over on their respective opinions, and I don't have enough facts on the table to make a judgment.
Mr. Flynn, if you were a president for one day and you could do anything you wanted to steer the nation towards a direction that you think would be important for Homeland Security, what would you do?
I think the most important thing is something that Admiral Lloyd mentioned, which is really to engage the American people, to get out of this kind of paternalistic approach of you shopping, travel, we get it under control. You know, the problem with the statement that everything that can be done is being done is missing the most critical element to our success in dealing with this issue, which is the engagement of we the people. And coming clean about the limits about our intelligence, coming clean about the limits of what our military capability can do, and the need to roll up sleeves and spend many years ahead making our society more resilient, not fail-safe, resilient. The kinds of things we stand up and applaud when we see the Londoners get back on the train the next day, or what we saw in the Blitz. This is the kind of character that is in the American people, I'm convinced. I saw it being in New York on 9/11 with no federal authorities in sight. It's the failure to call upon us all to be a part of this solution, to share the sacrifice in dealing with this war that I think is the most important thing I use my day for.
Stephen Flynn, Admiral James Lloyd, we thank you for sharing your views this morning.
Good.
What do the New York Times, the Carlyle Group, Eli Lilly, Ford, Johnson & Johnson, Hallmark, Lehman Brothers, Staples, and Pepsi have in common? The same board members. What do the Washington Post, Lockheed Martin, Coca-Cola, Dun & Bradstreet, Gillette, GE Investments, J.P. Morgan, and Moody's have in common? The same board members. What do GE, which is also NBC, Anheuser-Busch, Avon, Bechtel, Chevron Texaco, Coca-Cola, Dell, GM, Home Depot, Kellogg, J.P. Morgan, Microsoft, Motorola, Procter & Gamble, what do they all have in common? The same goddamn board members. The idea of the media in this country, the idea is that mainstream media should describe the collective group of TV, radio, and newspapers, the media, in this country. The word mainstream implies that the news being produced is for the benefit and enlightenment of the mainstream. Us, the population, the majority of people living in the United States. However, mainstream media no longer produce news for the mainstream. Instead, it is more accurate to speak of big media in the United States today as the corporate media, and to say that the media is really a medium, because it refers to a singular, monolithic, top-down power structure of self-interested news giants. A research team at Sonoma State University recently finished conducting a network analysis of the boards of directors of the 10 big media organizations in the United States. The team determined that only 118 people comprise the membership on the boards of directors of the 10 big media giants. These 118 individuals, in turn, sit on the corporate boards of 288 national and international corporations. In fact, 8 of the 10 big media giants share common memberships on boards of directors with each other. NBC and the Washington Post both have board members who sit on Coca-Cola and J.P. Morgan, while the Tribune Company, the New York Times, and Gannett all have members who have a seat on Pepsi. It's kind of like one big happy family of interlocks and shared interests, except their interests are self-oriented. Remember, business only cares about business. Business is only interested in profit. Business doesn't care about service and about the public. Can we trust the news editors of the Washington Post to be fair and objective regarding news stories about Lockheed Martin defense contract overruns? Or can we assuredly believe that ABC will conduct critical investigative reporting on Halliburton's sole source contracts in Iraq? If we believe the corporate media give us the full uncensored truth about key issues inside the special interests of American capitalism, then maybe they are doing they're meeting the needs of mainstream America. But it's obvious that corporate media serves its own self-interests instead of those of the people, and we can no longer call it mainstream. Now, it does please me that finally, after it seems like an eternity of having only right-wing thought on the car radio when I'm driving around town, suddenly we have, well, Air America offering an alternative voice. And it is amazing to see the fits of denial and conniption that idiots like Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity and others just go into, because finally their one-sided, hateful speak, Bush-supporting, war-supporting, racist, sexist crap has an alternative voice. Now, Kill Radio is doing pretty good. We got a link on a New York Times story about Nick Harcourt that has brought us more listeners than ever. So we are an alternative media source that is giving you a different way to look. but we're tiny. Nobody pays any attention to us. But it's nice to know that we're helping. You know, we're helping in there, presenting an alternative voice. So stop calling it the news. Just call it the business news. That's what it is in the corporate media. Okay, this is Bennett hoping that this one is will change sometime. There you go. There's another Impressionistic News Hour for you. Bastille Day. Numbers coming up and down. We heard the Jam back there with a bomb in Warder from the 70s. And we heard DJ BC did Mad World Forever using that Beatle Mash background stuff. We heard some of Natural Born Killers. We heard from 2001 UK Brass Eye TV show, a report on pedophiles. We're hearing a siren go by. There's a fire truck. And we heard some church program describe depression as evil spirits. So it's been quite a day today, I'd say. You're listening to killradio.org. We're in Los Angeles. Where the hell are you? And this program is also rebroadcast on Upstart Radio. On used to be Saturdays. I think it's Fridays now and Mondays. Maybe it's and maybe Thursdays. Maybe Thursday evening, which would be appropriate. Anyway, whatever you want, Sean. It's fine with me. And listen to my music show, The Chill Room, on Saturday nights at midnight Pacific Standard Time. And in the meantime, come back next week, because there's always more news. This is Kill Radio. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to kill your friends.